Sometimes it's hard for those of us who live in white skin to hear words like racism and white supremacy. Sometimes we think some of this talk about racism, I think, is just maybe oversensitivity. Some of it's not meant to put people down. It's not racism. It's just people being overly sensitive to things. Well, I used to kind of wonder about that, but something really brought this home to me a couple of years ago about this sensitivity thing. I was part of a group that was trying to form an interfaith ambassadors group in Lake Travis. Well, we had people come together from the Muslim community, from the Buddhist community, several Christian pastors, a Catholic priest, and we all came together to say, how can we bring together people of faith in our neighborhood? And we shared ideas, and we came up with some things we could do, and I offered our church's volunteers and people and all. But I said at the end, I want to be open about this, and I want to share with you that our congregation is about 90% LGBT. And we finished up the meeting, and we met again for the second time in 2 weeks. And the person from the Muslim community was there, and the person from the Buddhist community was there, and the Christian pastors were there, and the Catholic priest was not. And I said to the woman who was organizing us, did he not come back because of us? And she said, oh no, don't think that. I said, did you ask him? She said, no. But then she tried to make me feel better, and she said, but if he did, well, it's his loss. Yeah, and I've heard that before. But here's the thing. My life experience as a gay woman suggests to me that very often those responses are about being gay. When people turn away, when people treat me differently or other, that's what my life experience tells me. And I had to open up my eyes and say, what has life experience taught my black brothers and sisters? And that was a real changer for me, along with other things. Today, we have a special guest here to talk to us about black role models and racism. Clear away everything that would keep you from hearing his message. And let's share together today in God's plan for diversity and for the beloved community. Don.
Good morning, everybody. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Don Tisdale. I'm a lay speaker for the United Methodist Church. I'm a member of Wesley United Methodist Church in, well, it's in East Austin, 1164 San Bernard in East Austin. I'm not going to explain everything that lay people do there. I did that earlier this morning, and I don't think that's really necessary. But in honor of Juneteenth, and I hope all of you know what Juneteenth is about, I'm going to talk to you this morning about some black role models in the Old Testament, and then about some that are a little more recent. But first of all, I want to thank your Pastor Karen for inviting me. I appreciate the opportunity, and I look forward to your response to what I have to say. Now, first of all, we're going to look at three black role models in the Old Testament. Now, I want you to understand one thing up front about the Old Testament and the New Testament. I don't care what anybody else has told you. There is no darkness curse anywhere in that 66-book canon that we all carry. Nobody was ever turned dark because of curse. If somebody told you that, or if you hear somebody say that, the best way that I can tell you to address it is they're lying to you. The first black role model I wanted to address to you is a guy named Moses. Moses is a very interesting person. But I want you to know, and no offense to anybody, but Moses didn't look anything like Charlton Heston. Moses was raised in Egypt as a prince of Egypt. He lived there for 40 years. The Egyptians did not look like the Europeans. But Moses fit in. He looked like the Egyptians looked. So for 40 years, he was raised as a prince. He was educated. He knew where things were, where different countries were. He knew what was happening in the world of that day. And when Moses was about 40 years old, he killed a man in Egypt. And he didn't want to suffer the consequences of having done that. So he left. He left Egypt and went to the land of the Midianites. I don't know how many of you or Bible scholars or have ever studied that, but Midianites were also black people, and they lived just a little north and east of Egypt. While he was in the land of the Midianites, Moses married a black woman. It was the daughter of the high priest of the Midianites. His name was Jethro. Now, it was from Jethro that Moses learned about monotheism. He didn't learn that in Egypt. Egypt worshiped multiple gods. Monotheism was not taught in Egypt. But he learned that from the Midianites, from his father-in-law, Jethro. He lived there for an additional 40 years. Now, one thing about our God, and I have to say that I happen to like this about him, he doesn't care whether you're black, blue, green, yellow, young, old. None of that matters to him when he gets ready to use you to do something. He just doesn't care. The only thing he looks at is what's in your heart. He wants to know that your heart is right. And sometimes he has to give us time to become what he wants us to be so that we can adequately do what he wants us to do. And once he sees that we have become what we need to be, then he'll reach out and touch us and say, hey, there's something I want you to do. Come here and let me tell you about it. I'm paraphrasing a little bit there, but you know. So at 80 years old, he reached out to Moses. He said to Moses, hey, there's something I want you to do. I need you to go back to Egypt and tell the Pharaoh, let my people go. But Moses told him, say, hey, look, man, I'd like to help, but, you know, I really don't speak well. I've got this little stuttering problem, and he starts going on and on about that. And the Lord told him, he said, don't worry about that. I'll send your brother Aaron with you. He likes to talk. You just tell him what to say, and he'll say it. So Moses still was a little hesitant. So he said, well, what if the people don't believe that you sent me? And the Lord said, take the staff in your hand, throw it on the ground. And Moses did that, and the staff turned into a snake. And then he told Moses, now take the tail of the snake in your hand. And he did that, and the snake turned back into the staff. He said, I want you to do that in front of the people. And when they see that, they will believe that the Lord has sent you. Now, bear in mind, he wouldn't have had a stage like this. He wouldn't have had a microphone. There was no closed captions or closed circuits or anything like that. Whatever he did in order to show that God had sent him had to be something spectacular from a distance, and it had to be something so unusual that everybody would take notice. Now, against that backdrop, Moses said, well, what if they still don't believe me? And in the fourth chapter of Exodus, we see what the Lord told him. He said, if they don't believe that, what I want you to do is take your hand, stick it inside your cloak, and when you pull it out, it will look like it was leprous. The skin will turn white, like you have leprosy. Then take that same hand, stick it back inside your cloak, and when you pull it out, the hand will be restored to the condition of the rest of your body. Now, I want you to think about that for just a minute. If Moses had been white and his hand was turned white, you think that would have impressed somebody back there? But if Moses was my color and I stuck my hand in here, now it's not going to happen right here, so don't get that. God has told me to do many things, but that's not. But if he was my color and he pulled his hand out and it was white, and then he put his hand back in and it turned back to this color, you think those people in the back might notice? Now, God used Moses in a very powerful way. He did a lot of things, but I want you to understand, he did not look like a European hippie. He was clearly a person of color. The second person I want to talk to you about in the Old Testament is Phinehas. Now, who was Phinehas? And why would I think that Phinehas was a black man? It's because of his name. You see, Phinehas is a Hebrew corruption of an Egyptian word meaning the Nubian or the black one. Phinehas, the Nubian. the black one, grandson of who? Aaron, who was the brother of who? Moses. Might tell you a little something about them too. Phinehas happened to witness something that had created a problem for the children of Israel. You see, they'd gone and were living in the land of Moab and had begun worshiping Baal, Baal of Peor, to be exact. So they were doing a lot of things that God didn't want them to do, especially some of the sexual immorality that the Moabites were doing. Now, God had already come to Moses and told him, he said, look, all of these people that are doing these things, that have joined in the worshiping of Baal of Peor, there's only one thing you can do for them. I want you to get yourself together and you go out and kill every one of them. And as they came to the meeting tent to decide how they were going to carry that out, Moses and all the rest of the leaders of the Israelites. Now bear in mind that Moses is whatever he is. One of the Israelites' men brought into the tent a woman, a Midianite woman, actually, and he laid her on the floor of the tent and began having sex with her in front of Moses and everybody else. Most of the people just kind of stood there and watched. Phinehas went and got a spear and stuck it through both of them. Now bear in mind that at this point, God was mad at Israel and he was determined to kill all of them too. That's why the plague had struck Israel. And they would, over 24,000 of them had already died from the plague because they had gone astray. They were following the Moabites and worshiping Baal. After Phinehas did what he did, God told Moses, he said, look, this man is zealous for me. He is as I would want all of you to be. And because he has done what he's done, I'm going to stop the plague on you. And he did that. He stopped the plague at that moment, let the death toll stand at 24,000, and made a pledge to Phinehas of an everlasting priesthood for him and his descendants. Two black role models from the Old Testament. And in honor of Juneteenth, let me tell you about a third black role model from the New Testament, Old Testament, rather. Now, these are not the only ones. These are just the ones that I chose today. This particular role model, his name is Zephaniah. He was a prophet. When you look at the first chapter of the book of Zephaniah, it tells you Zephaniah is the son of Cushi. If you know who Cush was, Cush was the son of Ham. And the countries that he founded, generally spoken of as Cush, is what we would look at modern day as Ethiopia and Sudan. So when you see something in the Bible referring to Cush or Cushy, or ham. It was generally referring to something straight up out of Africa or black people. And Zephaniah, when the Lord spoke to him, said that he would do what the Lord wanted. And the Lord wanted him to go and talk to certain countries to deliver a message to them. The countries were Judah, Philistia, where the Philistines were, Ammon, Cush, Assyria. And what do we know about all those countries? They were countries that were full of black people. Zephaniah was sent to let them know about the coming destruction when the day of the Lord occurs. Excuse me. But he was also charged with bringing them the good news of what would happen if they stopped doing the things that they were doing and started obeying the Lord. Three black role models out of the Old Testament. I told you earlier, I was also going to tell you about three more recent black role models that you may or may not be familiar with. The first one I want to tell you about, I think some of you have probably heard of, is Phyllis Wheatley. Phyllis Wheatley was born in West Africa around 1750, but she was sold into slavery at the age of 8. And she was brought to this country. Within a couple of years, she had mastered English. Phyllis Wheatley became the second woman in this country to ever publish a book, even though it was against the law for black slaves to be taught to read. Not only did she master English, she also mastered Greek and Latin, and astounded some authorities when she translated some poetry from Ovia, who was an Italian poet born about 50 BC. All his writings were in Latin, by the way. Didn't make any difference to her that it was against the law in this land for her to learn to read. The second person I want to mention to you is kind of tied to somebody else that you've probably heard of. It was Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison invented the light bulb. Did he not? But he had a problem with his invention. Problem was, the filaments that he came up with lasted a very short time. So the light bulb, you screw it in, it'd come on, but it wouldn't last very long. There was a guy in Massachusetts who was born of two escaped slaves. His name was Lewis Latimer. Lewis Latimer not only lived as a free man, but as a free man, he taught himself drafting and those types of skills because he couldn't go to any school to learn them and became very good at those things. And he was an inventor also. One of the things he did very early on was he invented a way for water closets to work well. And because he was able to invent this way for water closets to work well, they were able to have restrooms on trains. After that, he took a look at what Thomas Edison had, and he invented a filament that would not destroy itself as quickly as the one that Thomas Edison had. And when he approached Edison with that filament, they were able to put it all together and make light bulbs practical for production and reasonable to put in cities. Now, I know you probably never heard about him, but that doesn't mean he wasn't there. He was there and he did that. In addition to that, because his skills were so great with drafting and drawing up things for patents, he was hired by Thomas Edison to work in his legal department to draw up drafts for all of his patents and to keep an eye out for anybody trying to infringe on his patents. And in fact, he helped another guy who had an invention that was originally designed to help people that were hard of hearing. He did the drafting for the patent on this guy's invention and submitted it to the patent office, and it was approved. The guy who asked him to do that was Alexander Graham Bell. So Louis Latimer, who invented several other things, by the way, you get a chance to Google him, I think you'd find him very interesting. The third recent black role model is someone that I had the pleasure of meeting in person. Now, some of you are a little young, so you may not recall this, but I think there are a few of you out here that may recall how when space capsules used to come down, they would black out for a while. You remember that? They were coming down, they would black out, and they would tell you that, well, we don't know what's happened to the space capsule until it reaches a certain point in the atmosphere, and then we'll reestablish contact with it. You remember that? Some of you. But it just so happens that the engineer for NASA that led the team that solved that problem was a black man. His name was Vyrese Henry. He was an engineer for NASA, and you have to search NASA's only, well, I've gone online to try to find his name in the NASA files, and I did eventually find it and the books that he wrote and some of the information about what he did. But you never hear anybody at NASA giving him credit for having done that. The reason I had a chance to meet him was because he happens to be my wife's uncle. And he came to visit us. He sat on the sofa in my den, and we talked about what he did. And I told him, they must have given you a lot of money for that. And he said, no, they didn't give me any money, but I got a lot of professional recognition. Now, I know that these are not the only role models out there. I mean, they're ethnically, there are black role models, brown role models, yellow, green, blue, whatever. I know lots of people have done lots of things. I just want you to understand that if you are black, black people have been contributing to this world and to this society forever. I'm not going to tell you that Moses was the first one, but he was among the first. There were plenty more before that and lots more after. And people that would bring up things like racism, which to me is just What is that? What is it? What is race? So European construct came about, what, 14th century or whenever it was. Just an idea that, hey, my group is better than your group, and here's why. To me, there's only one race, the human race, and we're all a part of that. You know, when I look at it and I think about it, I think it's kind of like looking at birds. You've got eagles soaring up high. You've got hummingbirds. If all the laws concerning birds were made by eagles, if you didn't soar high above everything else, if you couldn't swoop down and grab a trout out of the lake, then you were inferior. But if all the rules have been made by hummingbirds, that soaring and grabbing trout wouldn't mean a thing. You'd have to be able to hover in front of a flower blossom, fly backwards. Eagles couldn't make it. Point is, without somebody trying to say that one is better than the other, they're still all birds. And without listening to some of the, I don't want to say the wrong word in front of you, some of the crap out of some people's mouth, you know, I was listening to the news this morning, and yet again, there was a story about black people being mistreated by the police. This case was out of Phoenix, and it had to do with a young black woman and her family being accused, not proven or shown anything. Just somebody said they thought the little daughter, who was, I think, 3 or 4, might have picked up a doll in the dollar store. You know, after a while, you get a little tired of hearing that kind of thing. Why can't we all just treat each other like brothers and sisters? What is the point of going out and saying, hey, because I'm darker than you, that makes me better? Or because I'm lighter than you, that makes me better? And my whole group is better than your whole group. We're still all part of the human race. If you trace our mitochondrial DNA, it all goes back to one black woman in Africa. I don't want to go too long here. There are a lot of other things in my mind, but I promised you, Pastor Karen, that I would cut it off at a certain point. And maybe return at a time when we could have a little more time and maybe have some back and forth. So if all of you together would look at Karen and say, bring him back later. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.